Okay, and I've unmuted our speaker, so Steve will be able to actually talk to us. So I will officially open the meeting and welcome Steve Gordon to the call. Steve was a speaker at our last year's conference and on this very issue, although he's got other things that he's done that he speaks on as well. And he's the author of Ministry as Art and How to Turn Your Ministry into a Beautiful Work of Art. Does a lot of lecturing and other projects and things around the area. With that, though, I will hand the microphone on over to him. And for those of you who are watching, you'll be able to see the PowerPoint as we go along.
So can you hear me okay, Brenda?
I can hear you fine. Yes.
Okay, so we're talking about
Oh, and I will
fundraising.
say if anybody is, yeah, we're talking about fundraising. I will say now there will be a Q&A, an opportunity to ask questions. We'll wait until Steve is done, and at that point we'll be pressing star six. Sorry about that, Steve. So you can go
Okay.
ahead.
So we're talking about fundraising for controversial causes. Hopefully everybody can see the PowerPoint. And just a quick introduction about me. And I put my email address at the top of the slide so people can are free to contact me, email me with any kind of questions. Totally fine with that. And my primary vocation right now is that I'm a prisoner reentry consultant. I'm actually one of the first ex-offenders in America to start a for-profit consulting firm on prisoner reentry. And communities and counties and people like that have been paying me real money to help set up prisoner reentry programs, which I found very exciting. And before that, I was a consultant on nonprofit management and fundraising, and also did a lot of web design along the way. I am an ex-sex offender. I was on the registry in Oklahoma for 10 years, and recently was removed from the registry due to the way that we had it set up here. So I'm very grateful to be off the registry, which has been a great blessing, obviously. Prior to that, I was in the computer industry for 22 years, and I've been serving on the boards of nonprofit organizations in some form or another since 1985. So, I just picked up a lot of things along the way, and I decided to, study fundraising and try to be as innovative and creative in that arena as possible because I just saw so many smaller organizations struggling. It's always coming back to lack of funds, such a big constraint in the work that we do. So that's just a real quick review of who I am. So today we're going to have a fairly brief agenda. We're going to talk about sort of a general overview of how fundraising should work, how it doesn't work, and then how it should, and then give you some frameworks to understand fundraising. And then give you some real specific ways that you could go out and be effective, even as an individual or as the leader of an organization or as part of a team within an organization. I think you'll find a lot of these principles and practices, useful as you go forward. And I'm assuming that we have a mix of people here, and some who've never done any fundraising and some who may have been struggling at it for a while. And some of you may be very successful fundraisers, for all I know. So we're just going to run through this. And this is all material mostly that I have developed over the years just by being out there and just doing it on the front lines. And hopefully this will be helpful. So by way of introduction, we're going to talk about the old fundraising mindset, as I define it, is based primarily on donor contributions from individuals. And that could be in a variety of different forms, different kinds of gifts. Donors, typically are people who are sympathetic to your cause. Some of them might be middle-income people or wealthy people. And so that just basically governs the amount of giving that they can do. But we find that to be pretty labor-intensive. And also, we find that there's a tendency within nonprofits to become grant dependent and not really learn how to build organizations or funding strategies that are sustainable, other forms of revenue, other forms of income besides just donations from individuals or from even from foundations, that can be a part of your strategy, but it certainly should not be your whole strategy. And the old way of doing it, I believe, it really took away from pursuing your core mission and your vision, because you end up having to fund the organization. You had to just work and work and work at funding, often taking 50 or 75% of your effort, which I find, you know, is sort of counterproductive. And so even to the point where a whole industry has risen up, you know, so that you require the services of outside agencies who you had to pay to help you do fundraising, which thus reduced the amount of money that you're raising. So I felt that was a, sort of a dysfunctional model there, and so I'm trying to come up with a new way of viewing things. So I believe that the principles or the points of a new mindset on fundraising, what I call the 21st century way of fundraising, is a shift from a poverty mentality of constant lack to a fundamental belief in the abundance of the universe. That if you are doing a righteous cause, something that's a worthy cause, that there is plenty of resources out there, and you have to assume plenty rather than lack to really be successful and get to the level that you need to. I believe one of the ways you do that is that you tap into that is creating multiple simple revenue streams, such as passive income from internet-based business models and just other things that we're going to talk about today. So you have to be fairly creative when it comes to funding a controversial cause. And we will always want to be leveraging the power of the web. That could be email marketing, crowdfunding, some of the things we're going to talk about in more detail as we move through this presentation. And I think the real key is partnering with business owners and businesses to create outcome-based funding projects where you're matching their goals in wanting to contribute to the outcomes that you're producing. And because really, a conscientious business owner or investor should be looking at how can we be investing in community improvement. So we want to move away from just that mindset of you're a poor charity and you need a handout to being seen as a partner in community improvement and doing things that are, you know, that are fairly measurable and are valuable to people who have money. And now finding sympathetic business owners for controversial causes isn't the easiest thing, but I assure you they do exist. And then we want to study new economic development models that show promise. And you know, we're looking at ways of incorporating membership, dues, you know, all these other things that can be done in a nonprofit world, but also starting to think like business people and how we can view these our efforts as a community impact that deserves an economic investment. And that's a new thinking, you know, for a lot of nonprofit people, but that's what I try to do is instill more of a business-like mindset more of an strategic investment on behalf of the donor. We definitely want to avoid becoming grant dependent, as we talked about earlier, and we always want to be looking to the free market system for that innovation and that creativity. And we want to move toward creating leaner, more streamlined organizations that have the elements of self-funding solutions designed into the very fabric of that organization. So we want to be building a team, you know, sort of a team approach where everybody in the organization is involved in fundraising, not just delegating that to one person as we've traditionally done. I think it requires a new style of leadership that creates strategic partnerships based on investment value and mutual benefit rather than that charitable donation to a needy organization, as I was saying. Okay, this is a reminder, even a warning that I always try to put out there because so many people that are new to fundraising do not understand this concept, but that is that most grants and foundation gifts are for a particular project, and the word project should probably be double, triple, underlined there, and they do not provide funding for general operating expenses, which would be like your salary. And the reason for that is that most funders want to help the organization accomplish a particular goal or a project or an outcome and are not just interested in giving you money just to help run your organization. They're expecting that a well-managed, well-run organization is already going to have its basic income needs met so that it's stable enough to go out and then do things in the community that bring about impact and change. And that's not always a good assumption on behalf of the funders, you know, because a lot of times we aren't well-funded. We don't have that good foundation of solid, dependable funding. And so there are some foundations and people out there who will give toward general operating expenses, but they are the fraction of the pool of potential donors. So this is a framework that I use to help communicate some of these principles, and it's called the PACE acronym. And most of the people I've dealt with have not heard of this before, so I'm going to run through this. So a well-balanced nonprofit, a well-balanced organization is going to have equal distribution of effort across four different areas. The first one is P for programs, which is the mission, you know, the things that you're doing to fulfill your vision, the primary operation of the organization that you exist for. And then you need to have a good, sound administration. So many people are so focused on their cause that they're not well administered in the back office, but you need to have good accounting, good paperwork, all that stuff needs to be paid attention to. And then capital development is the C, and that's really an acronym or a buzzword for, not an acronym, but a buzzword for fundraising. And so in the fundraising industry, they tend to call it development. So you need to be doing that about 25% of the time. And then evaluation, now that's the one that's not as self-explanatory. I guess goal-based governance is a way of explaining that, but to make that more clear, the board is supposed to be setting goals for the organization and then evaluating on a quarterly basis that the organization is moving forward and meeting those goals. And if you're going to have a healthy organization, you need to be doing all four of those general activities in equal parts. So we see that fundraising is important, but it shouldn't be 50% or 75% of your organization's bandwidth or your time commitment. It should be about 25% to keep that in balance. And so as we go forward, I just want to kind of put that in context for you, or you keep that in mind as we go forward, because it can seem like fundraising can just absorb all your focus, all your activities, but you can't let it do that if you're going to be a sustainable, well-managed organization. This is a diagram I came up with called the Nonprofit Development Architecture, and you don't have to do all these things that I'm going to talk you through. I just want to put this in some sort of a framework so you can understand if you had a larger type organization with a team of people that work there, there's a way of spreading the fundraising efforts over the team so it's not all just on one person. Typically, the executive director is tasked by the board to do the fundraising and run the organization, and that's almost like two full-time jobs, as it were. And so we want the executive director to be freed up to run the organization but not have the full burden of the fundraising. And so you can see there that at the top is the board of directors, and one of the jobs of the board of directors is to create the job description of the executive director and hire and manage the executive director. And but also, one of the other main purposes of a board is to fundraise, to take responsibility for the funding of the organization. The board cannot delegate that to the executive director and expect that to work and have a well-funded organization. And so within the board of directors, I recommend that they form a development committee, which is probably two or three people who are especially gifted or interested or passionate for fundraising, and that committee take direct responsibility for the fundraising efforts. The board would take general responsibility, development committee specific responsibility, and the development committee would oversee the development team, which is made up of one or two board members, possibly the executive director, a couple of staff members, a couple of volunteers, maybe a consultant. That's your development team. So the executive director has a dotted line, as you can see, to the development team. They all work for him in one sense or another, him or her, in one sense or another. But the team is taking responsibility for doing all the activities of fundraising, with one exception. you can see that across the top of the diagram, there's an arrow that goes from the executive director over to the right to major donors. Now, the one group that executive director role definitely needs to be doing direct fundraising toward is the major donors. And he or she needs to have about 20 or, maybe 12 to 24 major donors that they're building a relationship with, staying in contact with, and really cultivating that group, because that's where a lot of your major gifts are going to come from, the ability to call on people in a time of emergency. If you've kept that relationship going, that's the best use of the executive director's time in fundraising, in my opinion. So the development team is going to take responsibility. There's going to be training for them. And then the four things that they're going to operate in, the four sectors, are website, campaigns, events, and projects. And let me explain those real quickly. The website needs to be very specifically geared toward fundraising, and we're going to talk more about that in a minute. Campaigns are typically fundraising drives to raise money for a particular outcome, like we're building a new building, we need to buy a van, that sort of thing. An event is more like a banquet or a golf tournament that you're doing to raise money for your organization. And the nice thing about events are they can raise general funds that can be used for your general expenses rather than a particular purpose. And then projects, I believe you can partner with other nonprofits in certain instances and do fundraisers that where you share the income. So you might do a golf tournament and three or four organizations that are friendly to each other might come together and do that and share the revenue from that. And then you're going to your campaigns and your events, you can see that they flow down toward the business community. That's really where you're going to target most of your appeals, is to people, leaders and people who have money to invest, money to give, donate, and so forth out of the business community. You can also see that the website is connected to a box that says external fundraising tools, and that's things that we can talk about, like Good Search, Good Shop, Amazon Smile, different things that you build into your website that are out there helping raise money for your organization. And then the box that says programs means the executive director, as you can see, has direct oversight to the programs of the organization, and those are the ongoing main objectives and programs that the organization is doing that you need the money for, to pay for the ability to execute those programs. And I also include local government in that, because the local government is responsible for creating a healthy business environment for the business community to be prosperous, and also sometimes your programs will be in partnership with some sort of government entity. So that's just sort of the overview of how this stuff works. Obviously, if you're a person working by yourself or you're a very small organization, you might do bits and pieces of this, but you wouldn't have that whole team to work with. Okay, so just talking about some tools in your toolkit for being a 21st century fundraiser. First of all, you got to be creative in your thinking, and especially when you're dealing with controversial causes, you can be frustrated or you can feel intimidated to where you're not thinking of any ways to raise money. You've got to break out of that. You've really got to develop some creative thinking. And that can be done. You can be inspired by conversations with others, things you read, research, that sort of thing. The internet is full of great ideas for fundraising. So make sure you're keeping an open mind and not let yourself be backed into a corner. Okay, donor letters. You need to have some compelling donor letters at your disposal that you have sort of pre-written and pre-thought out of how you're going to do this. Because when you find a potential donor who's sympathetic to your cause, you need to reach out to them quickly. And you need to get right back to them. It's about a 48-hour rule on that. Once you hear of an opportunity, if you can respond to them with something, even a letter or a card or a note that says, we'd like to meet with you or we'd like to follow up on that, if you can get that in their hands in 48 hours, you're going to have a much better a chance of making that, turning that into a real opportunity. So in-person visits are best when you're doing fundraising as you're developing these relationships, but that's not always possible. But obviously the letter can be hand-delivered or it can be mailed or emailed and that sort of thing. And in either case, though, you must accompany your visit or your letter with a marketing pack, which we're going to talk about on the next slide. So the marketing pack is a set of collateral materials that support your efforts. And it's, in its most basic form, it's going to be a brochure, a business card, and some testimonials. You might have some additional reports of results and outcomes and things that have happened, statistics. But those three things are your basic marketing pack. And you need to make sure that that's all supported and in sync with a good website. And especially if you have color schemes, design, any of that, it's really great if your brochure can look like your website and so forth, so that it looks like you've got like just a good, solid approach to your marketing. Because the image is so important with people nowadays. And so you want to maintain a you don't have to spend thousands of dollars on that, but you need to have a reasonable-looking, professional-looking image in your marketing efforts, because people have short attention spans and they're getting pickier about stuff like that. So you don't want to end up in the trash can. You want to look like you're serious and should be taken seriously. Then the next thing, you want a minimum of a basic website, but needs to look professional. And so just like modern-day job seekers, fundraisers must be aware that a new potential donor is going to jump on their browser and try to get a feel for who you are in your online personality. So you're sort of applying to this person for some support. They're going to go check you out online. And you've got to realize they're doing that more and more all the time. And first they're going to look at your website, but they're also going to look at other places on the web where your name might pop up on Google or your organization's name and that sort of thing. So you need to be aware of that. You need to be aware, how do you look online? What's the presentation that's coming across? What message are you sending? And sometimes if it's challenging, or if you don't know what you're doing, or if it looks bad, you might want to hire some sort of a web marketing consultant just to help you make sure you have the best impression possible online. The next tool in your toolkit is an advanced website, and this is one that you don't hear much about, but I believe in this greatly, and that's to build a second website, if you will, that's specifically that is about fundraising. Because really, you can either enhance your basic website or you could build a second website, either one. But websites are supposed to make you money in the nonprofit world, not cost you money. And the way that you do that is by intentionally building in the sort of the pitch and from different angles, ways, reasons they should support you, easy to give, easy to make donations, various giving levels, all that spelled out very clearly so that they're not having to click through six or seven screens trying to find out how to make a donation to you. They need to be able to do that right from the home page, and it needs to be woven through all the aspects of your site is the concept of funding. Finally, one of the tools that people overlook is your ability to sell things. So if you have the time and ability, you consider selling things to raise money for your cause. And T-shirts are the best option, but there's obviously a zillion other ways that you could do that. And setting up an online web store where people could buy stuff has gotten a lot easier than it used to be. And as a matter of fact, they're very easy. And even with T-shirts, for instance, there are services now where they can just, you don't have to buy 100 T-shirts and put them in a warehouse and drop ship them. There's people who do that for you, and they'll just do them one at a time. With your logo and so forth, so you might want to look into that. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that tonight, though. So if you're trying to be as organized as possible, and especially if you have a board that is who's asking, okay, how do we do this? How do we fundraise? What's the right way? This is the strategic elements that you have to have in place, in my opinion, and this is what I've used with all my clients. So the bottom there is you want to get some funding, okay? And that funding is going to come through letters that you write, grants that you apply for, and other opportunities. And to make that application process, that appeal process as straightforward and easy as possible, is you need to have a case statement. And a case statement is where you pre-write out the case for why people should invest or donate to your organization. So it's that case for support. So you're going to have your vision statement, your mission statement, your board, your budget, your history, all the things that people ask for, especially if you can imagine writing a grant. The things that people ask for in grants is basically the same thing in a different order or slightly different format with each different funder, but the same information is repeated over and over and over with each grant opportunity. So you want to pre-write that one time and get that out there and stabilize and approve so that the wording of how you say things is the same in your brochure and your website and your grant application. You've written it one time, and then you can just cut and paste from that case statement into these other documents and website and so forth. So the case statement is very critical, but you can't really write that unless you have developed an operations plan of how you operate and your marketing plan of what you want to say about yourself. So those precede the case statement, and then I believe you can't really write those unless you've done a strategic plan. Your board needs to do about a 3-year strategic plan or longer if they want to in some sort of annual board retreat where you've got a strategy, and then you're deriving your annual operations plan, marketing plan for that, and building your case statement. And then the case statement needs to be reevaluated and kept updated at least once a year. Okay, in controversial causes, you're going to have a lot of resistance. And those could come, I call it external resistance versus internal resistance. So external resistance is prejudice against your cause. And internal resistance is within you where you're fearful of going out and being a spokesperson for that controversial cause. And what you have to realize is you're an activist out there on the cutting edge of social change. And resistance just comes with the territory. Every activist from every previous cause has had the same thing to overcome. And so it's not unusual if you get resistance. It comes with the territory. And so most leaders that we've found have a natural internal resistance to fundraising. They don't like to go ask for money. But you're just going to have to deal with that because that's what leaders do. When you're in that role of activist, you have to ask for money. It's the core activity, really, of keeping that organization going. So it takes humility to ask others for money. You have to be humble enough to ask and realize that you need their help. But at the same time, you have to possess self-confidence to risk rejection and being turned down. And rejection is a very common thing that we find in fundraising in general. And then we take a controversial cause. You're gonna experience rejection. And so one of my mentors has said, if you don't steward the rejections, you'll never steward the approvals. And I really like that because you're going to have to just be good at handling rejection. And the number one way that you handle rejection from a donor is you thank them. Even when they've rejected you, you thank them for the opportunity, thank them for the meeting, and so forth. So that sets you apart right there by being thankful even in the face of rejection. And so the key to overcoming resistance is passion. And so to have someone give you money for your cause, you have to believe in what you're doing so strongly that the other person will too. You have to draw them into your passion. And I would say if you don't have a passion for your cause, you probably are not called to do the fundraising for that cause. You have to be very passionate. You have to overcome intimidation. And the way that I recommend doing that is by recognizing activism is an exchange. You give people knowledge or an opportunity to get involved, and they give you a commitment in exchange. And raising money, as I was saying, is the very heart of activism, no matter what your cause. And so mastering fundraising takes courage, but also takes practice and good old-fashioned hard work. And as a friend of mine said, you need the heart of a dove and the hide of a rhino. And I think that's a great combination. One of the things we've learned is that you need to leverage your core group, and the first few donors that you get are the most important ones. Because once you get that momentum going, you get them convinced, it's much easier to go to the next level. So it's hard to sometimes to get that first big donation, but when you do, use their show of support to convince others to join in. And so if you're still afraid after all that of taking risks, think about the families who are suffering today and the fears and risks that they face. And that hopefully will make your struggles seem smaller. And finally, just to kind of sum all that up, there's some critical success factors that you have to absolutely do to be successful in fundraising for a controversial cause. And that is you got to get out of the old mindset into the new, plan your work and work your plan. Watch out for those designated gifts that are only for a certain cause because you cannot spend them on something else, like your salary, if it's designated for a particular outcome. And you need to commit at least 25% of your organization's overall efforts to fundraising. And a comprehensive case statement, as I was saying, is a must. A great website is a must. And treat your donors, small or large, like gold. Yeah, overcome resistance with passion. And then in the famous words of Galaxy Quest, never surrender and never give up. So that's the main points. So I'm open for any questions and answers. And a PDF version of these slides is available upon request.
All right. So thank you very much, Steve. Yeah, thank you very much. I do have a question to get started, but I will remind everyone that if you have a question, you're welcome. I encourage you to use star 6, which puts you in the queue, and then I can select you. Steve, if you wanted to put your email address up back up there again, the people that want a copy of the slides, you get to go back through it all. We can get back to that, and that'll give people an email address to request those.
Okay?
Yep, I see it, and we'll say it out loud for those who are not watching. The first question actually comes from Jennifer, who typed her question into the chat bar, which is, if you're a new organization, and I think many of the folks on the call are probably new or non-organizations, actually. If you're just getting started, what would you suggest is the best first step to fundraising?
Well, if it was me, I would go to my local United Way and just ask them for advice and ask them if they have any free training, any support, any resources in the local area, because they tend to be sort of a central clearinghouse of information about how to do good fundraising. And try to find somebody like that locally that can encourage you. There's a book out called Fundraising for Dummies, which is fantastic. If you just want to get that book, it's going to help you. It's sort of the older mindset of, you know, how to do fundraising, but it's a great resource for traditional fundraising efforts. And I think that would be the two best resources I can think of right off the top of my head.
Okay, so Fundraising for Dummies and United Way. Does anybody else have questions for Steve? I'm not seeing any. Again, it's star 6. I think we'll let me make sure I'm not missing anybody. I don't think so. Anybody else have a question? If you want to rattle off your email, okay. That would be good.
Yeah, again, my name is Steve Gordon. And my email is Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, and then Stephen with a V, middle initial R, all run together, GordonStephenR@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, if I were to, we recently did a fundraiser here in Maryland, which was a letter campaign. It's the first time we've done one of those. We're very excited to have somebody to help us with that. And it did really well. We were able to raise a substantial chunk for a legal challenge here. And I'm just curious, though, I mean, it took us several years to reach the point where we did that. The other things that we have, and I don't think you've touched on this, is the idea of ongoing membership contributions.
Right.
And I was wondering if you wanted to comment on that. I mean, we call it a membership, but it's basically the idea of having monthly donors and having options available on our website for people who they can't give you $100 or $1,000, but they can put in that $5 or $25 or $50 per month, and it's a guaranteed revenue stream, and that's been really, really helpful in our group.
Right. Yeah. Now, if I understand you correctly, those are two different things. Membership dues and individual donors are two different things, because membership dues, somebody's got to pay that once a year to your organization. And I think that's where a lot of your good base funding can come from, to kind of stabilize your organization if you are set up in your bylaws and your incorporation to be a member organization where you can have members paying dues. That can be a really nice thing to just, you know, you're going to have this X amount of money coming in every year. And And then individual donors, yeah, you definitely want on your website the ability for people to just, there should be like a $25 button, a $50 button, you know, whatever those, you have six or seven buttons there, maybe from $10 all the way up to $1,000, where they could just click that button and give that amount. And then you should also set up the ability for them to set up recurring gifts where they can say, yeah, I want to give $25 a month. And the website allows them to set that up without you having to do anything. You do that through your payment gateway on the website.
Right. Yeah, we use PayPal. And that makes me think that we may want to reconsider how we name the things that we have. Because we have an annual membership, but we call anybody who gives us money over that bottom line per year a member.
If their total giving is more than the equal to
right.
or more than the membership dues, right?
Yeah, and so basically, like in our case, I'll go ahead and put the numbers in there. Fair here in Maryland gives requests $40 annually, so that's
right.
kind of our minimum. But the next step up, you know, there's some higher membership amounts if you want to be a, you know, we have special names for it at upper levels, higher
right.
levels, but the first monthly that we offer is $5 a month.
Uh-huh.
And so that's obviously already more. And so assuming that they've set up an automatic contribution, you know, several
right.
months they've paid it, we just call them members, you know,
sure.
and left it at that. So
the other thing I didn't mention in my presentation is one of the best ways that I've seen to make money, that's it's quite a bit of work, but is to do a conference. Because if you could do a conference that people pay to come to, that is where the venue is donated, like a church, you know, or whatever, where they let you come mm-hmm. and do the conference for free or almost for free, and then people are paying, you know, $75 or $100, whatever, and you put on a really good, high-quality conference, you can clear thousands of dollars, you know, on one of those, too. So that's also another effective way mm-hmm. that I've used quite a bit for fundraising.
Yeah, I guess the trick there is to get people to come.
Right.
You have to get sufficient number of people to show up. Well, I do have one person in the queue, and I had one other question that came
sure.
in via the chat. I'll take them in order, which was the chat. Can you tell us a little more about how you would see crowdfunding working? I think you touched on that a little bit, but could you give
right,
me some examples and describe how that would work?
Yeah, there's some. I've just actually been studying this more recently because there's been some advances in that. But there's a free webinar out there now on how to do crowdfunding the right way that I will send you that information as soon as I'll have to get that link. Let me write that down while I'm thinking of it. But
all right.
Basically, crowdfunding is where I think the most simple way to do that is to create a PayPal button on your website and or that you could email to people and or that you could text to people to say, hey, you know, we're in a big fundraising push here. We just need you to give $5. You know, it's like a micro gift, you know, in a sense, just a one-time $5 donation, but you get that out to thousands of people. And so you're sitting at your whole mailing list. You're asking all your friends to send that to their mailing list, and you work all your networks. And like this, just a big surge of activity to try to get everybody to give $5. So that can raise thousands of dollars, you know, without, I mean, that's very common now that's happening. And so that's sort of crowdfunding in a nutshell. But
okay.
I'll send you the webinar because there's some newer thoughts on that I'm still learning about, so.
Sure. Okay. Well, we'll take our first person from the queue, I hope. Yes, I've succeeded. Okay, I think this is Don.
It is. Steve, I'm astounded that you can make a business out of consulting for prisoner reentry programs.
How about that?
Speak to me a bit, to us, about who is starting these kinds of programs, and I mean, what types of groups are doing it?
Okay, well, my main client is Tarrant County Government, which is the government in Fort Worth, Texas, and they put up some funding. 4 years ago to say, hey, make reentry better in Tarrant County. We want to be very effective in prisoner reentry. And I happened to win that contract. And so we went in and we built them a great website, a resource directory. We've implemented a coalition that's now the largest reentry coalition in America. We have over 35 organizations all partnering together. And so I'm the project consultant for all of that. And I've leveraged that to other organizations, other areas. I'm talking to Birmingham, Alabama. I'm talking to Dayton, Ohio, different places where they're trying to basically form a community coalition. We're trying to shift prisoner reentry from being correction-centered to being community-centered, because unless communities embrace reentry, it's never going to be sustainable. And so I wrote a book about that called Purposeful Neighboring, Creating Reentry-Ready Communities. And I basically go and teach communities how to form a coalition and how to get busy with reentry. And it's been very rewarding. I spoke at 4 national conferences last year and 4 regional conferences. And 2015 is looking good, you know. So I'm just out there doing it. It's just red hot. And very gratified. Yeah, very gratified to be involved with that.
The name of your book again was what?
Oh, okay. If you go to my website is called Strategic Reentry Group. .com, strategicreentrygroup.com. My book is out there for free. It's a free downloadable PDF. It's called Purposeful Neighboring, Creating Reentry-Ready Communities.
Well, that's new. Type that up somewhere so that we can all see that, because I didn't get that ahead of time. Purposeful
Neighboring.
Neighboring. So far. Hopefully, if we hunt for that,
yeah, right on my homepage, it says click here for the free book. And Strategic Reentry Group.com. Actually, I've got it up on the screen. Hang on, it's my very last slide.
Oh, it was the last slide.
Hang on.
No problem.
I didn't get to the very last one.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
Right there. See where my domain name
there
is?
There you are, Strategic Reentry Group.com.
Hang on.
Yep.
There it goes.
You ended your slideshow. There it is.
Yeah.
And that's the title of the book as well. So for those of you who are can see, it's written right there.
Yeah.
So it looks like Steve has a blog called allthingsreentry.com. And
I've got a new website out there called reentrylifeskillsacademy.com, where I have every kind of life skill that you'd ever need, like anger management or financial literacy and all those things. I went and found YouTube videos on all those different topics, and I put them all on one website so people could sit there and self-learn the different life skills that they need to rehabilitate their life, which is a big piece of reentry, of rehabilitation and reentry. So
Definitely. Okay.
I stay pretty busy.
Am I still live here?
You are still live.
Oh, okay, thanks. Directing back to the my original question before I derailed us with the book here, then the motivation that you see for starting these programs, I think I heard you say, is really coming from these government groups as opposed to churches or somebody else. Is that
it actually varies by community. I've seen it come out of probation. I've seen it come out of a church. I've seen it come out of just concerned citizens. In Fort Worth, it's the county government, you know. It's kind of random in a sense, you know, just people getting concerned and trying to make their community better. It has a lot to do with poverty alleviation and also homelessness, you know, because we say reentry work is homelessness prevention. You're trying to keep, you know, intervening with people before they go homeless, and that seems to be a good niche too, so.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? This is a new topic for many of us, because I think you're right, Steve. I think a lot of folks treat this as we're all too broke, so we don't dare ask for money kind of mode, so it's definitely a new concept for some folks.
Right. So. And there's wealthy people out there. Some of them are already being generous and are known for their generosity. And, you know, hopefully you can connect with them in such a way, because, you know, the really wealthy, they get asked for money something like 10 times a day, you know, so that could be, yeah. How are you going to stand out in that? But there's some yeah. wealthy people out there who really haven't begun being generous, and you need to persuade them of the value of being a generous person. And if you can help carry a wealthy person into generosity, it's going to be a blessing to them and to you. So you've got to keep that attitude,
true.
Too.
Yeah, it was really a wake-up call. I mean, you the slide where you were describing what the executive director does, I'm executive director of not one but two organizations because I'm insane.
Yeah,
and,
that's pretty crazy.
But that, again, with this most recent fundraiser, which was a letter campaign, but one of the things that my consultant insisted on was that, you know, okay, you know, let's go find who your top donors currently are. You know, it wasn't that we'd never had any fundraising; we just hadn't ever really planned it. And he said, go look and see who's giving you the most. And so we went and looked. We found their names. And he said, you've got to call them personally. You know, that's, yep. you've got to talk to these people. And he said, don't roll your eyes. And I said, shoot. But so I did. You know, I contacted them. And in the end, you know, the idea was that we set a goal. And we specifically, you know, we asked them questions and, to build a relationship, and said, well, how's it going? You know, some of them were registrants themselves. Actually, most of them were, and but they still had means. You know, they so
sure.
it's not really true that registrants all are broke, and
right.
that's
right.
definitely have to get out of that mindset. You know, that these were folks that they were retirees. They still had an income, you know, even though they had a prison sentence, you know, so they hadn't messed with their retirement stream, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And so I was able to speak to them, checked back in with them later. They, all of them to a letter, pledged something, you know, a couple of hundred to a couple of thousand. And you know, over the period of a couple of months, they all produced it, you know, and they said, it's going to hurt, but I'm going to do it because it's important. And,
yeah, that's
and,
great.
Yeah, so I guess that's just for those who are afraid of doing it, I just thought I'd share that. I think it was a success story. Anything else? We're not getting a whole lot of questions, which is, that's okay. Hopefully we've been learning a lot. But if anybody else has a success story or a specific question about how do I do this or anything like that, now's the chance.
Well, Brenda, I have a question. Is this webinar recorded and such that people could go back and see it later, or is it going to be archived somewhere, or how does that work?
Yes, sir. It will be recorded. It's still being recorded. And at the end of it, I can share a link. The Start Meeting website, I'll definitely have it posted there, so you could click on that. And what people would see at that point is pretty much what, if you did the screen sharing, you know, you would be hearing Steve's voice and seeing the presentation. So that's
right.
That's what you get with that. Uh-huh. And so if you want a copy of it, that's where you can come to, Steve, if you want to
sure.
tuck that away. All right.
Very good.
Any other questions? Oh, yes. Oh, no, Don is still active. I thought, oh, boy, we have a new one. But he's still sitting there lurking because I didn't hang him up.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
You're welcome. I've been glad to have you, and I certainly have learned a lot. We are going on 9, so I guess we've done pretty well here.
Good.
If there are no other questions, and I'm seeing none, then I'll take people off mute. You can all give Steve a round of applause, and I'll turn off the microphone first, though, so we won't blast people's ears.